Blog Talk Radio.
Someone, maybe even yourself, who suffers with pelvic pain, like a woman's issue, that interferes with intimacy and pleasure. And this may have been going on for a long time, maybe months, maybe even years, and maybe you thought that there's nothing more you can do. But what if a simple change in diet could actually relieve some of the pain, if not all of it? Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the 30 powerful Healing Through Love lessons. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who just keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s and beyond. Dr. Jessica Drummond has 2 decades of experience in women's pelvic health, and she's a physical therapist, functional nutritionist. Great combination. She's founder and CEO of the Integrative Women's Health Institute, a private women's health clinical nutrition and coaching practice. She regularly lectures to medical and healthcare professionals about her unique perspective on ways to empower women and to support clinicians. Her approach includes conservative options for pelvic pain management, hormone balance, preconception and fertility support, postpartum recovery, and chronic pain and fatigue management in active and athletic women, and I'm sure much more. And her website is healingpelvicpain.com. So I'm delighted to welcome you, Dr. Jessica Drummond.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is a topic that many of us don't really want to look at or talk about. It's not as sexy as how to have better sex, you know, and those type of topics. But it's so important. It's impacting so many relationships, and many of the women probably feel lost. So I would love you to tell a little bit about your background, education, training first that led you to your current approach, and then we'll go on from there.
Sure. Well, I graduated as a physical therapist in 1999, and I worked primarily initially in sports medicine and orthopedics, and pretty quickly, though, began to specialize my practice in women's health around orthopedic issues related to women's health conditions. So, for example, shoulder pain after breast cancer surgery, or back pain or pelvic girdle pain in pregnancy and postpartum. And over the years, essentially the most complicated and challenging diagnosis or syndrome of symptoms that I came across was working with chronic pelvic pain, which, you know, is a variety of underlying diagnoses. Can be anything from endometriosis to vulvodynia to painful bladder syndrome, pelvic floor dysfunction, anything that causes or related to pelvic pain.
Mm-hmm. Let me stop you for a moment. Just since you mentioned these terms, just say what they are. endometriosis, and I forgot what else you said.
Sure. So endometriosis is a disease process where tissue that is like the tissue inside of the uterus, but not exactly the same, grows outside of the uterus. So it's growth of somewhat uterine-like tissue. So it's not cancerous, but in some ways it sort of behaves like cancer in that it's growth of tissue in the wrong place in the pelvis, which can, of course, cause pain and infertility and other issues. Vulvodynia is pain of the external, very entrance to the vaginal canal. So the tissue outside of the vagina, the vulvar lips, the vulvar tissue, can be painful, and also just the very entrance of the vaginal canal. And painful bladder syndrome can come from any source, that such as interstitial cystitis or any other source that causes pain right around the bladder or urethra, which can be triggered by a number of things such as chronic urinary tract infections or things like that. And then pelvic floor dysfunction. Pelvic floor muscles are the muscles that support all of these organs of the pelvis, the bladder, the vaginal canal, the rectum. And when those muscles are tense or irritated in some way, that can cause pain. And I just wanted to make something clear that actually many of these things, not endometriosis, not vulvodynia, but certainly painful bladder syndrome, certainly pelvic floor dysfunction, can also happen in men. So men do have pelvic pain syndromes as well.
Yes, I have heard that with a few of my clients, and they didn't know they might have pain on orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can really affect a man's enjoyment. And for women, it's hard to even have intercourse. So I didn't mean to interrupt you about your background. So just maybe continue about, you know, what led you nutritional and functional medicine, whatever else you're doing.
Yeah, so I use a lot of physical therapy techniques to help my patients with these conditions. But at a certain point, there were some that we could completely resolve and others that we couldn't. And then I had my own first baby in 2003 and struggled with really recovering postpartum. I had some issues that caused some hormonal imbalances. I had a lot of fatigue. And essentially, a nutritional approach was what helped me to completely recover from that. But it took a long time. It took a lot of learning on my part. It took finding clinicians who were willing to go that route rather than just sort of throw antidepressants at me, right? And so what I realized was, well, of course, many of these pelvic pain conditions do have hormonal components. Some of them, you know, worsen at different times in the menstrual cycle, or the symptoms exacerbate at certain times in the menstrual cycle. So I decided that I would consider trying to apply some of the nutritional strategies that helped me to recover my hormonal balance postpartum to my patients who are struggling with chronic pelvic pain. And it was really effective. So eventually I went back to school and got a doctorate in clinical nutrition. And so for most of the last 9 years, I've been combining all of these integrative approaches to address chronic pelvic pain, because it's about the food, it's about the manual therapies and the pelvic floor muscle relaxation, and how all of the pelvis integrates with the hips, and, you know, all of that from a musculoskeletal standpoint, kind of the muscles and the joints and the bones. But it's also about things like digestion and immune function and healthy, you know, hormonal cycles. And that those are things that we can better address using nutrition.
And what's interesting is that many of the people who are promoting nutritional products, they say, just take this and it's going to take away your pain. And very often it's not that simple. No matter what your issue is, a pelvic pain or another pain, that the nutrition may help, but there may be something physiologically going on that needs Right. Like you do the physical therapy part. That might be necessary.
Absolutely. And, you know, and nutrition is so much more than just, you know, throwing a supplement, right? So, for example, magnesium can help to relax the muscles of the pelvic floor, can help if someone's constipated. But in most cases, you know, adding a magnesium supplement is not going to help someone set a really strong foundation of pelvic health, which includes, you know, drinking plenty of water, getting all of the micronutrients, lots of vitamins and minerals from lots of fruits and vegetables, making sure that their digestive system is working well so they can actually absorb all the nutrients, make sure they're eating adequate high-quality fat so they can build hormones. And we also have to address things like stress and support. You know, how many close girlfriends you have makes a big difference to the underlying health and resilience of even your hormone system.
And it's not only close girlfriends, but the type of girlfriends. If you have friends that are jealous or critical, you know, because I've had a few of those, and you don't feel so good about whatever the symptom is, or they're judgmental and they don't agree with whatever treatment you're getting. So I didn't want to forget to ask, because we started talking about this at the beginning, and I thought it was fascinating that the changes that have happened since you started working, you said it was about 18 years. So what changes have you noticed in the women's symptoms or anything else that's going on?
Well, I think the good news is there's a lot more awareness by both practitioners and patients because of social media. There's more direct conversations about pelvic and sexual pain issues, which really were not talked about. You know, this was something that women didn't even tell their gynecologists. Now, certainly, we still have that problem with a large percentage of women, but increasingly younger women, you know, I've started having consults with women and their teenage daughters to really sit down at age 16 or so and discuss these issues and talk about what it takes to have a healthy menstrual cycle and talk about the risks and benefits of various contraceptive methods. And a lot of that is because on social media, it's much more acceptable to talk about things that were once far more taboo. So I think that's a real benefit. And so along with that, the clinicians are much more aware that pelvic and sexual pain is not just because, you know, the woman's not relaxed, right? I can't tell you how many times, you know, 15, 20 years ago the doctors would be like, or even really relatively recently, but you'd go to your doctor 7-8 weeks postpartum, having sexual pain, maybe now even 6 months postpartum, still having sexual pain, they'd be like, oh, just relax and have a glass of wine, you'll be fine. I mean, that is just not a treatment, right? So it was much more kind of like blaming the patient for her own lack of relaxation. And that's just not getting to the cause of what's causing these issues. So the practitioners and the patients alike are more well-educated. However, when I first started in this field, it was about a 15-year delay from someone experiencing symptoms to finding a practitioner who could really be helpful in the realm of pelvic pain. Now that time frame is about 7 years, which is much better, but it's still not where we need to be.
Well, I'm just thinking what that does if someone is in a marriage, has just had a child or wanting to have a child, and they're having pelvic pain, you know, what does that do to the relationship? And if someone is single, dating people, it's huge. So 7 years, it's amazing. That's such a long time. So
it is.
How prevalent
In some ways it's worse some ways it's worse for men because, again, it's, you know, even it's more taboo, I think, for men, whereas women are starting to talk about it a little bit with each other. So for men to have pelvic pain just sitting or with orgasm, you know, it's something that's hard to talk about. However, I would say that men more quickly and kind of more aggressively seek treatment, whereas women often are kind of told that, hey, this is normal. You know, once you get your period, like, this is just part of being a woman. Like, expect to have some pain. It's just part of it.
So how prevalent is this problem in our society?
Well, endometriosis is quite common. 1 in 10 women have endometriosis. And about 60% of women, will have some kind of pelvic pain during their childbearing years, if not more. The data is anywhere from about 60 to 80%.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's very common. And for most women, it's somewhat transient, maybe during postpartum, but it can also, or like around perimenopause. Vulvovaginal dryness is very common postpartum because of the lower estrogen levels, and the same thing in perimenopause. But, you know, these even more complex and problematic, and not to say that vulvovaginal dryness isn't problematic, it's a significant problem, but even these more complex conditions like endometriosis and vulvodynia are very common. I mean, tens of millions of women are dealing with this every year.
And then there are the women who've had genital mutilation. Have you seen any women with that issue?
I have not seen that personally in my practice. It's relatively uncommon in the U.S., but certainly it does exist. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, in certain societies, and they're fighting it. So mm-hmm. How does this pelvic pain affect women at different ages, like in adolescence, adulthood, or even elders?
Sure. Well, in adolescence, the common issues would be kind of the initial discovery of endometriosis. So if someone has very painful periods that keep them from going to school, and the pain doesn't have to be cyclical even. It could be, in fact, in adolescence, it's even more common to have kind of intense cramping, deep pelvic pain, out of the blue, irregularly, that kind of intense pelvic pain, that those first signs of endometriosis generally show up in adolescence. Also just cramping, menstrual cramps can happen when someone isn't eating a healthy diet and has some digestive issues. So for example, women with PMS eat about 245% more sugar than those who don't have PMS. So, you know, the
wow.
High stress, high junk food lifestyle of your typical high school teenager can lead to just general pelvic pain around poor menstrual health. As I said, endometriosis. And the other issue is more and more younger girls are being put on hormonal contraceptive pills for things like acne and PCOS or irregular cycles or prolonged cycles, things like that. Excessive bleeding, and I'd really rather take a nutritional approach to that, because when you put someone on hormonal birth control, you're actually lowering her estrogen level, and that can cause, it is a risk factor for vulvodynia, and it's a risk factor for, which is that painful vulva, and it's also a risk factor for women having painful orgasm.
Yeah, we very quickly give people medications, and this is affecting the hormones, birth control pills. All right, but what about in adulthood? What are the problems that they face?
Right. So women in the postpartum period often have more pelvic floor dysfunction, some pelvic organ prolapse. They could have had episiotomy or tearing during childbirth. They have that low estrogen state of breastfeeding. So there's more sexual pain awareness, more pelvic floor dysfunction, sometimes, you know, just vulvovaginal pain with wearing tight jeans and sitting, things like that. And then in perimenopause and menopause, similarly, you'll have lower estrogen states, vulvar atrophy, vaginal dryness, pelvic floor muscle weakness, so things that can be related to stress urinary incontinence or a worsening pelvic organ prolapse. And the pelvic organ prolapse is when the bladder and the rectum are sort of pushing into the front and back vaginal walls and can actually be sort of sinking down into the vaginal opening. So that can be painful on penetration or just in general, can be painful and a heaviness feeling if women are trying to exercise. So it can slow women down from progressing their exercise in their older years. So those are sort of that's the most common progression. And of course, a lot of times endometriosis is not diagnosed in adolescence. So women will find out they're dealing with it more in their 20s, 30s, and 40s when they're struggling with infertility.
Wow. I wanted to ask about the prolapsed uterus. Is there a way to fix that through exercise?
Yes. Yeah, so bladder prolapse or uterine prolapse or rectal prolapse is all sort of a lack of support from the muscles and fascia of the pelvic floor and the pelvis in general. Now, at a certain level, it's too progressed for physical therapy to really reverse the situation. But even when it's pretty significant, it can be improved. There's a grading system for how severe the prolapse is. And so physical therapy, exercise, and training can reverse that by about a grade.
So the sooner that somebody approaches the healing, the better it is.
Right. So ideally, every woman postpartum. Now, certainly prolapse can happen prior to pregnancy. It's very common in women who are in high-impact sports. Like 80% of trampolinists have pelvic organ prolapse,
wow.
Some stress urinary incontinence.
Really?
Gymnasts, pole vaulters, things like that, like a hard jumping, hard landing. There's some issues with distance runners because they also tend to be lower estrogen because many of them aren't getting enough micronutrients, but those sort of thinner sports. But this can happen prior to pregnancy, but it's of course most common at postpartum. And then sometimes women who don't know they had it postpartum, maybe they have just like a mild grade one prolapse postpartum, but then in perimenopause, they start having symptoms because of the changes in hormones and lower testosterone, less estrogen, which make the structure of the pelvic floor muscles less robust and resilient because there's a lot of receptors for testosterone in the pelvic floor muscles. So as those hormone levels decline, you don't have the support from the pelvic floor, so sometimes those situations can progress. So ideally, you know, pretty immediately postpartum, within the first 3 months or so, I strongly recommend going to see a pelvic specialist physical therapist to just assess, you know, have your abdominal musculature recovered? Has the pelvic floor and pelvis recovered? Is there any signs of even a mild prolapse? Any resilient, any leftover urinary incontinence or any fecal incontinence, because these things are really very common, and the earlier that we address them, the better. And nutrition comes into play there, because the more women are eating the nutrients they need to rebuild all that collagen and have the protein to strengthen the muscles, the more effective the rehab is going to be, the physical therapy is going to be.
Wow. I was thinking as you're talking that we are reminded to go to the dentist every 6 months, you know, to regularly check our teeth. And we may go to a gynecologist to generally check for disease, but they may not be checking what you're talking about, you know, in depth.
Right. Yeah. In fact, gynecologists generally don't check pelvic floor muscle and prolapse, because they use the speculum, right? So they're sort of just sticking a speculum in, moving these muscles out of the way, and looking at the health of the cervix and, you know, the uterus and the ovaries, and making sure there's no precancerous states in the tissue and things like that. But it's not a normal part of the exam for a gynecologist to look for pelvic floor health and for pelvic something like a prolapse.
So you have a big task to educate the public about this. It's so important.
True.
So now I want to ask you, what are the traditional treatments for pelvic pain, and how does your approach differ?
Well, so when I first began in doing this work, you know, the physicians would use more opioids, more antidepressants, more benzodiazepines, and, you know, there were more like things like bladder instillation, so more of a medical therapeutic approach, also more hysterectomies. But, you know, we learned that about 50% of the time a hysterectomy is useless and it doesn't treat endometriosis at all. So the approach that I use is to combine pelvic floor physical therapy or pelvic floor muscle relaxation in a lot of cases with pelvic pain, because a lot of times women who have pelvic pain will be tense in their pelvic floor muscles. It's sort of like if you have a headache, your shoulders might be kind of always drifted up by your ears, right? The neck and shoulder muscles are always tightening up. And from a more energetic perspective, to me, the pelvis in a way is like a home of safety. And sort of when women feel safe, they can relax the muscles of the pelvic floor on just a general day-to-day basis. So if we consider the number of women who've experienced sexual trauma, it's a lot, harassment, abuse, assault, and just general trauma where they're not feeling very safe in their lives. There can be sort of a general tensing of the muscles of the pelvic floor. And then combining that with using nutrition. So I start with what we call an elimination diet, which is basically just a really clean food plan, consistently eaten for 4 weeks to help us assess the health of the digestive system. Because if someone's constipated or someone's chronically bloated, that's going to irritate the pelvic organs and, you know, of also the muscles of the pelvic floor, because they'll have to strain every time they're using the restroom. So optimizing digestive function is really step one from a nutrition standpoint. And then similarly, making sure then people are able to absorb the nutrients that they need to optimize the health of the immune system and the hormone systems, which is a lot about like getting good vitamins and minerals in, lots of vegetables. We're trying to work our way up to something like 8 to 10 servings of vegetables per day, lots of healthy fats, avocados, olive oil, nuts and seeds, things like that. And also addressing, you know, the stressors and the movement in that life. So if a person's, you know, sitting at a desk all day and mostly spends their time sitting where they're in a desk, they're in a car, they may have constipation just from lack of motility of the intestines, because you're just sitting all day. You know, getting up and walking 1 hour a day or even 10 minutes every day consistently can make a big difference to the blood flow, to the lymph flow, to the gut motility, allowing that whole region to heal. So I think what's most interesting about the pelvis is that you've got these reproductive organs, which are hormonally responsive. You have the digestive system ending up in the pelvis via the colon and the rectum. And you've got the muscles of the pelvic floor and the nerves and circulation that innervate all of that and feed all of that. So we have to look at all of those symptoms, the systems. You can't really take the pelvis out of the body and just sort of like give someone pain medication for that location. You've got to get each of those physiologic systems working really well.
Yeah, I wanted to add something that I was surprised when I heard, that they call the pelvic area, abdominal area actually, which includes the pelvis, the second brain. Because there's 50% of the dopamine and something like 80 to 90% of the serotonin floating through there.
Right, so it's produced in the nerves of the, produced in the nerves of the digestive system, essentially. Yeah.
Right, and millions of nerves there. So it's huge, that area. Not something to be taken lightly.
Absolutely.
So now a specific question. You talk about anti-inflammatory nutrition being helpful. So can you provide some dietary suggestions?
Yeah, so there's a range of healthy anti-inflammatory food plans. It kind of in the middle, and the best studied is what we call the Mediterranean diet, which is essentially lots of fruits and vegetables, olive oil, some nuts and seeds, fish, a little bit of kind of organic meats and poultry, and whole grains like rice and, you know, wheat. And then some people have some sensitivities in there and they maybe can't tolerate gluten, or they do better with less meat, or they do better with fewer grains. So then there's kind of two ends of the spectrum. One is a more vegetarian, plant-based food plan, which can be very anti-inflammatory. The challenge with plant-based diets is a lot of times people end up slipping into a pattern of eating mostly just non-animal processed foods. So like a lot of pastas and breads and store-bought cookies. Those are all vegan and vegetarian, but that doesn't mean they're good for you, right? So as long as it's a vegetable-based vegan or vegetarian diet, that can be very good for some people. For others, they do better with fewer grains and beans and things like that, more animal protein, but still across the board, we're aiming for a high volume of vegetables. And I mean like the not mostly non-starchy. You certainly can have some starchy vegetables like sweet potatoes and squashes, but leaning on things like mushrooms, asparagus, peppers, leafy greens, things like that, onions, garlic. There are some situations where some of those foods can be irritating to people in different situations. Some people are sensitive to nightshades. Some people are sensitive to some vegetables that can cause more of a bloating effect. So we have to work through that. But there's a range of healthy anti-inflammatory diets that your nutritionist can help you determine what will work personally for you, depending on a number of factors, your genetics, how active you are, if you have any current health conditions, if there are any foods that you're sensitive to. And the most research-based way to do that is to work collaboratively with a nutritionist through an elimination diet plan, where you're essentially removing things for long enough so that the immune system doesn't respond to it, and then adding it back in to see what the effect is.
Beautiful. All right, so now I just have a couple more questions, and I can kind of combine these. First, how does your treatment work for infertility, someone who wants to get pregnant and is having this pain and difficulty, and how do you help women postpartum after their birth and they have scar tissue pain or other pain?
Well, so with fertility, it's about normalizing the normal hormone flows, you know, elevation in estrogen in the first half of the cycle, lower estrogen and higher progesterone in the second half, FSH, LH. All of that is the kind of root of a normal, healthy hormonal cycle is healthy, balanced blood sugar. That's a really important place to begin. It's not always the be-all, end-all, but it's a really important foundation to set. So women who are eating a lot of sugar, who are skipping meals, who are under a lot of stress, who are traveling across time zones, things like that, who aren't sleeping well, the first place we start for fertility is blood sugar balance. The second thing to optimize egg and sperm quality is to make sure we're getting enough absorption of antioxidants. So that can be through fruits and vegetables. It can also be through supplements like CoQ10 or N-acetylcysteine, which helps improve the health of the DNA in the actual eggs and sperm. And then postpartum, you know, the issue is more fatigue, some shifts in the immune function, can be some scarring, whether it's from an episiotomy or a C-section. And so again, that's more about a time frame of recovery. So rest, social support, lots of hydration, lots of kind of slow cooked, I like soups and stews postpartum to really get nutrients in, but it's easier to digest. You have to have a lot of volume of hydration for good creation of breast milk, and prebiotic foods, which is the fibers that help probiotics to thrive, and probiotic foods themselves, which is things like sauerkraut, or coconut yogurt or things like that. So in both cases, we want to keep sugar down because sugar is very pro-inflammatory and it can cause some hormonal stressors, and lean on getting a lot of nutrients in. Studies even done on relatively high level, like collegiate high level athletes, show that in general, women are just not eating enough. They're not eating enough micronutrients. We might be eating enough, you know, processed breads and cereals and other kinds of grab-and-go processed foods, which we don't want to eat too many of those. So we might be getting enough calories, but that doesn't translate to having the raw materials that we need for all of these systems to function well.
So that brings me to my final question. Tell us about your ebook and how that is like a blueprint for women to work with to improve their pelvic health and overall health.
Yeah, so the book is Nutrition for Relieving Pelvic Pain, and it's designed as a partnership for between you and your practitioner. So buy a copy for you, share it with your healthcare team practitioners. And it's really about the step-by-step tools for setting that foundation. Are you getting enough micronutrients in? Is your digestive system working well? Are you getting adequate rest, adequate support? Are you feeling like you're in a really good communicative relationship with your healthcare professionals? Are you the leader of your healthcare team? Because that should be the case. Like, you should never feel like, you know, your doctor's going to fire you or something. It's like, no, they work for you. You're the leader of the team, and you can change that, right? And so just having really open and collaborative conversations and some of the communication tools to use to work with your clinicians. And then there are a lot of resources in the book for helping you find and build that team because, you know, the people who are really well-versed, high-skilled specialists in pelvic pain are relatively rare. It's again, much better than it was 20 years ago. You'll definitely find some in every major city. But there are spots, even in the United States, where, you know, you're going to have to work a little harder to find, build a team. But a lot of people who work in this field in nutrition or medicine or coaching can also work virtually. So, you know, in my practice, I see patients from all over the world. So part of your team, the pelvic physical therapy part of your team, you know, it's best to find someone who lives relatively local to you because you want to see them pretty regularly when you're in the heat of the treatment. But other team members can be further away if that's an option for you.
So the last question is, how can people get in touch with you?
The website is Integrative Women's Health Institute. And you can find everything there. We publish a blog. We have a contact page if they just want to connect with me. And we also are on social media. We're on Instagram at Integrative Women's Health and Facebook at Integrative Women's Health Institute.
Wonderful. Wow, you have provided so much information today. And I know that a lot of women will be grateful for this. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
And you're most welcome. And I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com, and ask for your complimentary Healing Through Love session. And there are free reports and videos, audios, and much more at the site. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.